Hi, it's Carter. Looking for a new show to binge this Thanksgiving? Well, I'm excited and thankful to be able to tell you about another Parcast original series I'm hosting called Sports Criminals. Well, they may be sports' greatest heroes, but when it comes to the downfalls of fame, money, and ego, they're far more flawed than you think. Every Thursday, Sports Criminals keep score on the darker side of sports. Each episode chronicles the high-profile names you thought you knew and the crimes you'll never forget. Enjoy this exclusive clip from the first of two captivating episodes on disgraced figure skater Tonya Harding. If you want to listen to the full episode, follow Sports Criminals free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. On February 16, 1991, 20-year-old Tonya Harding stepped onto the ice in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. She cut an atypical figure. Her skating dress was mint green polyester. Her blonde bangs were teased into frizzy curls. But Tonya was more than unique in her appearance. She was about to attempt something none of her fellow competitors could even imagine. A triple axel.
When her music started, Tonya first performed back-to-back camel spins, extending her right leg behind her in arabesque, balancing on her left blade as she whipped her body around. Then she pushed off, charging down the rink, gathering power for a triple lutz. Tonya balanced on her left foot, gliding backward, then launched off her right toe pick and rotated in the air three times. She landed perfectly on her right blade.
But a triple lutz was a relatively routine move for Tonya Harding. In his commentary, figure skating analyst Dick Button voiced what the entire rink was thinking. And now the question is whether she will become the first American to attempt and complete a triple axel jump.
Fueled by momentum, Tonya propelled down the ice, gaining speed. Then, halfway down the rink, she let herself coast on her right foot. One breath, two breaths. Then she turned and pushed off the outside edge of her left skate. Tonya rotated an impossible 3.5 times before landing back on the ice on her right blade. She nailed it.
The crowd exploded in cheers and applause. In that one split second, her entire life changed. Tonya Harding made history.
As sports reporter Chris Connolly lamented, if we could stop her story right there, it would be one of the happiest stories you could ever see.
But her dreams would end abruptly less than 3 years later, when her life was rocked with violence and scandal. Tonya Harding would be notorious for all the wrong reasons.
Welcome to Sports Criminals, a Parcast original. Every week, we dive into the dark side of sports history and look at athletes who not only broke the law, but broke the rules and covenants of their sport. We'll also uncover how their actions impacted the history of the sport they played. I'm Tim Johnson.
And I'm Carter Roy. You can find episodes of Sports Criminals and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Sports Criminals for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Sports Criminals in the search bar.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
Well, this week we're diving into the life of Olympic figure skater Tonya Harding. She reached the pinnacle of her career in the early 1990s as the first American woman to attempt and complete a triple axel jump in competition. She was expected to win gold at the 1992 Albertville Olympics, but she fizzled out, placing fourth.
However, as we'll cover next week, Tonya got another shot 2 years later in the 1994 Lillehammer Olympics. But she was no longer the favorite to win. this time, fellow American Nancy Kerrigan was expected to take home the prize, until she was attacked by a masked man about 6 weeks before the games. And many people suspected that her greatest rival, Tanya, orchestrated the assault.
What price was Tanya really willing to pay in her pursuit of Olympic gold? Was she involved in the attack on Nancy Kerrigan?
Or was she simply surrounded by the wrong kind of people, a victim herself?
In any rivalry, from the Hatfields and McCoys to the Capulets and Montagues, animosities are deepened by our fundamental differences. Well, this was certainly the case with Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding. Their story was painted with a stark palette, with no room for any gray area.
Nancy fit the prototypical image of a women's figure skating champion, a glamorous, all-American girl. She was graceful, elegant, and poised. She looked more like a ballerina in skates than an athlete powerful enough to launch herself into the air with one foot. Her routines were set to compilations from Beauty and the Beast, and her costumes were designed by Vera Wang. Tanya, on the other hand, was pure power, raw and unrefined. Rather than try to change who she was to fit someone else's standard, she seemed to enjoy shoving her sharp edges down their throats. She sewed her own costumes using bright, garish fabrics. Her routines were set to the music she liked listening to, like rapper Tone Loc's Wild Thing and Latour's electronica hit People Are Still Having Sex.
The two women couldn't have been more opposite, and the media relished in highlighting their differences. As Tanya put it, Nancy's a princess. That's how everybody saw her. She's a princess, and I'm a pile of crap.
The differences in these women made Tanya a clear underdog, but she forced the skating world to recognize that she was a contender with her talent on the ice. She could jump higher, spin faster, and skate harder. She made the world pay attention to her by accomplishing what no one else could.
Tanya first stepped onto the ice at 3.5 years old. In her biography, The Tanya Tapes, she described being drawn to skating as one of her earliest memories. One day, while she was shopping at the Lloyd Center with her mom, she saw people skating on the mall's public rink. She had to try it. She remembered, "My dad said okay, and my mother said no. So I cried, and finally she agreed. The first thing I did was make a pile of shavings on the ice and start to eat them. My mother told me I had to skate like the others or we'd leave. So I skated."
She was 3.5, and she just skated. She was that naturally talented. Tanya's mother, Livona Golden, alleged that Tanya could pick up any kind of move just by watching someone else on the ice. She taught herself the basics through mimicry.
To Livona's credit, she recognized immediately that her daughter was special. So she asked around until she found Tanya the best ice skating coach in the Portland area, Diane Rawlinson.
When Livona initially approached Diane, she refused to take Tanya as a student. She didn't work with children that young. But not to be denied, Livona sent 4-year-old Tanya out onto the rink, instructing her to skate circles around Diane to prove that she was worth training. And it worked. Diane agreed to a 6-month trial period. They ended up working together for the next decade.
And by the time Tanya was 6, she was landing jumps. At 9, she hit her first triple loop, and by 14, she was already attempting her now famous triple axel. Livona alleged that Tanya was self-determined in her training, up before her 4 a.m. alarm clock every morning, ready to go to practice. But it's very likely that Tanya's intensity and determination stemmed from a darker source. She had to be the best to survive.
Livona was reportedly an abusive alcoholic. Tanya alleged that every morning, her mother filled a thermos halfway with coffee and the rest of the way with brandy. Then the two of them headed for the rink at 4:30 a.m.
Once they got to the ice, Lavona stood on the sidelines watching Tanya skate, drinking from her thermos. When she wasn't skating up to snuff, Lavona let her know, loudly criticizing her in front of everyone.
Lavona has denied that any of her comments were abusive. Instead, she saw herself as motivating her daughter. She alleged that if no one told Tanya she wasn't good enough, then she wouldn't feel like she had anything to prove, and she'd be nothing. In Lavona's eyes, she was helping her daughter achieve her potential. But given the fragility of a young child's ego, this constant stream of criticism from her mother likely affected Tanya's sense of self. If she wasn't perfect, she was worthless. Diane Rawlinson described this confusing dynamic in an interview, saying, "Tanya's family loves her deeply, but her mother doesn't really know how to get the best out of her. She tends to put her down to get her to perform."
In one apocryphal story, Lavona refused to let 5-year-old Tanya leave the ice to use the bathroom. Instead, she forced her to keep skating even after she urinated on herself. Allegedly, she said, "I paid for you to practice, so you're going to stay on that ice and practice. You need all the practice you can get."
Tanya also contends that off the ice, Lavona was physically abusive whenever she felt like Tanya didn't perform well. Again, Lavona disputes this, but other people around Tanya have made statements to support the allegations. A mother of one of her skating peers alleged that Lavona once slapped Tanya in the face so hard it knocked her off the stool she was seated on.
Sandra Luco, who skated with Tanya as a child, described an incident she witnessed personally in Nanette Burstein's 30 for 30 documentary, The Price of Gold. She said, "During a skating competition, I was in the bathroom and Tanya and her mom came in there. Tanya was having some issues, and Mrs. Harding just lost her temper and hit Tanya repeatedly with a hairbrush. It was very, very, very upsetting to me."
Sandra, only 11 at the time, was determined to protect her friend. She approached Diane Rawlinson and told her she was calling Child Protective Services, but Diane convinced her not to do it. Because, of course, Diane was already painfully aware of what was going on. Lavona's abusive habits were apparently an open secret in the Portland skating community. But everyone also knew that if CPS got involved and removed Tanya from the Harding home, her skating career would be over.
Figure skating is essentially a white-collar sport, or less generously, a snob sport. It's incredibly expensive and time-consuming. Lavona paid for equipment, ice time, private lessons, costumes, competition entry fees, travel to competitions, and more. She drove Tanya to the rink every morning for practice, then drove her to school, then drove herself to work, oftentimes for a double shift.
In a 1976 interview, Albert Harding estimated that it cost $225 a month for 5-year-old Tanya's lessons. In 2019, that would be over $1,000 a month just for rink time. And the Hardings were not wealthy people. They struggled to pay their bills and were evicted several times over back rent. When Tanya reached the competition level in her early teens, the cost burden tripled. To come up with the money, Lavona maxed out credit cards, worked multiple jobs, and collected donations. Tanya recalled combing roadsides with her mom to collect bottles and cans for refunds. Lavona dressed Tanya in her competition outfit for school picture day so they could use the photos in place of professional headshots. Every single dollar went into skating, sometimes even over food. Portland reporter Ann Schatz said that a lot of the time, Tanya was skating on an empty stomach.
Lavona made a huge investment in her daughter, and she expected equally large returns. She had the example right in front of her with America's sweetheart, Dorothy Hamill, who won gold medals at both the 1976 World Figure Skating Championships and Olympics. Soon after, she was a spokesperson for Ford and Clairol. She became the featured star of the Ice Capades.
So, in Lavona's eyes, once Tanya was an Olympian, she'd get so many endorsement deals, the whole Harding family would be taken care of for the rest of their lives. This was their ticket to a better life.
And so Lavona pushed and pushed and screamed and slapped and beat Tanya, all in the name of protecting her investment. But in pushing her daughter to be the fiercest physical competitor, she left her emotionally stunted and vulnerable. The abusive dynamics of the relationship taught Tanya two things. First, that it was acceptable to use violence to get what you want. And second, that love is conditional. She was only worthy of affection if she was the best.
So if Tanya wanted to be happy, if she wanted to be loved, she better be the best. No matter the cost, no matter the pain.
And to find out what happens next, listen to Sports Criminals free on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.